What's Common Again? It's your host, David Knight.
December 22nd, 2017. I'm David Knight. Welcome to the show. We have a lot of amazing stories today. Of course, we're going to talk about everything from Bitcoin to Facebook to tax cuts. And then this, Sessions Awakes. That's the hashtag on Twitter last night, because he came out and said he's going to take a look at the Uranium One deal. Yes, finally. But even, I think, just as important, he also announced, although it didn't get that much attention, he announced that he is going to order an examination of the Bundy case. So, yeah, he's wide awake, perhaps. Let's hope that he doesn't appoint people like Rod Rosenstein or other holdovers from the Obama administration to investigate this. But I think what he's going to find when he looks at the Bundy case is what I was talking about yesterday, the fact that we have corruption at the top of the Department of Justice, corruption at the top of the FBI. And it's the same type of thing that's been happening with Uranium One, that's been happening with the Russian collusion investigation. So I think this is a very positive development. We're going to be joined later in the broadcast by Joel Skousen, and we're going to talk about what's happened with the Bundy mistrial, which may be a dismissal eventually. We hope so. It's going to be very hard for them, after what has come to light, to continue on with this charade. And I think the fact that Attorney General Sessions has personally ordered an investigation into this makes that continuance even more unlikely. So good news there. That's something that we're getting a lot of good news here at the end of the year. You know, I don't know. Are you tired of winning? I'm not getting tired of winning. And I hope this stuff plays out. Here's some other examples of what we've seen in terms of a turnaround. We had a Trump Department of Defense nominee who, remember, we reported on this a few weeks ago. He came out and made some very troubling comments about his non-support for the Second Amendment. Said he didn't support the unrestricted ownership of semi-automatic assault weapons by civilians. This is a guy that was being looked at, appointed by the Department of Defense, and now he has withdrawn his name from consideration because people in the Trump administration said, wait a minute, where'd this guy come from? You know, it is a qualification for the job to swear to uphold the Constitution. So that is immediately disqualifying. And of course, when you have so many appointments to make and so many different things, it's not a reflection on Trump when people like this slip through the vetting process. It is good that they took him out. There are going to be a lot of people putting forward names, and that's what the process is about, to find out who these guys really are, to examine them a little bit before you put them in office, and to find out that they have some fundamental issues with our form of government in our Constitution, so they need to get out. Also, we didn't report on this because of the taxes, but it was a couple of days ago. We actually did get a date for Franken to say that he's going to resign. He said he's going to resign January the 2nd. So we're eagerly anticipating that as well. It is going to be a Merry Congress and a Happy New Trump year. So goodbye, Al Franken. And then H.R. McMaster is still out there calling Islamic terrorism irreligious. You know, he absolutely refuses and tells all of his subordinates, do not use the term Islamic terror. Don't even say radical Islamic terror. You know, we put that, they soften it a little bit by saying, well, it's not Islam, it's radical Islam that's doing this. No, he doesn't even want it radical Islam. He doesn't even want it softened. He says that has absolutely no connection with the religion of peace. He says it is irreligious. Well, you know, he got slammed down. He is his advisor, national security advisor. But when President Trump made his national security speech, he used that term that H.R. McMaster hates so much. So hopefully he doesn't have much influence as the national security advisor. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Friday before Christmas. And it may be quiet in the house, but we've had Jeff Sessions awake. This was the hashtag that was all over Twitter. Hashtag Sessions awakes. What has he awoken to? Well, he has asked FBI agents for information on Uranium One deal. On the orders of Attorney General Jeff Sessions, reports NBC News, Justice Department prosecutors have begun asking FBI agents to explain the evidence they found in a now dormant criminal investigation into a controversial uranium deal that critics have linked to Bill and Hillary Clinton. And I would also say to James Comey, Bob Mueller, Rod Rosenstein. Multiple law enforcement officials have told this to NBC News. The interviews with FBI agents are part of the Justice Department's effort to fulfill a promise an assistant attorney general made to Congress last month to examine whether a special counsel was warranted to look into what has become known as Uranium One deal, said a senior Justice Department official. And, of course, the Uranium One deal and the profiting of this by the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton family, has long been known. What came to light this year that changed it was a whistleblower who, it also came to light, had been gagged by the FBI, threatened with punishment if he were to tell anybody about what he knew about this before it was approved. There was a great deal of corruption that was exposed. He was a whistleblower in this. The FBI knew about this and was investigating it well before it was approved. And it was all ignored. And then a gag order, very, very unusual how this individual was threatened not to tell anybody about all of this. And so because of that, it is new and it warrants investigation. But there's another thing that I think most people are talking about, the fact when they tweet out Sessions awakes, they're talking about that. Finally, they're going to take a look at Uranium One and they're going to look at the players involved in that. But there's another thing that happened yesterday, which makes this even more interesting that Sessions has awoken. The Washington Times reports Attorney General Sessions orders an examination of the Bundy case after mistrial over prosecution bungling. Let me tell you something. He is not personally ordering this over the fact that it was poorly done. He is ordering this examination because it's quite clear that it was criminally done. They willfully covered up evidence that would allow people to go free. This was a persecution. It was evidence of corruption, not only within the BLM, but within the Department of Justice and the FBI. Part of the whistleblower information that came out from Larry Wooten, and that was another damning piece of evidence. It's kind of interesting. You know, these individuals like the whistleblower, the witness with the Uranium One, somebody who was heading the investigation of the BLM into what had happened in the Bundy standoff, and he looks at this stuff and he tells the prosecutor, Stephen Meyer, he says, did you know that these guys had the special agent in charge had a kill book and did all these other things? And Stephen Meyer, who is leading this prosecution from the Justice Department, looks at him and said, I do now. And then a couple of days later, Wooten was taken off the case because Meyer knew that he knew this information. And so eventually the information came out, and that really blew this prosecution up. Even a judge who in previous trials of other people who had been at the Bundy standoff, she had been very highly disposed to censor information that was critical of the government. She herself had censored exculpatory evidence that would have released the defendants. So she was very biased in earlier trials, but this was so egregious that she was not going to put her neck on the line. And that's what's going to happen with these other whistleblowers. You're going to get some patriots, as one of the former assistant directors of the FBI said. You're going to get some patriots who are going to come out and blow the lid off of this thing, because other people are going to say, hey, I'm not going to go down for the criminal actions of this attorney that works for the Justice Department. So this is what was said. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has stepped into the Bundy prosecution after Wednesday's mistrial. He has ordered a third-party examination of the case in light of the latest government snafu. And again, it is not a snafu. It was not a bungling. It was criminal action. And these types of criminals have to be purged out of law enforcement, out of the Justice Department. The Attorney General, quote unquote, this is a statement made by the Principal Deputy Director of Public Affairs. He said, "The Attorney General takes this issue very seriously and has personally directed that an expert in the department's discovery obligations be deployed to examine the case and advise as to the next steps." So let me tell you what this is about. As I was saying yesterday, Mother Jones and other people are saying, well, this should have been an easy case. What a bunch of incompetent prosecutors. No, criminal corruption, whether it is at the grassroots level, like it was here with this Bundy case, or whether it is at the very top level, as it is in the case of the Russian prosecution, Russian red herring, or the Uranium One cover-up. Whenever you have criminal operations like that in the government, in law enforcement, in the Justice Department, in the legal system, it has to be purged. It has to be investigated. So this is a very good thing. Very good news. I think this is as a big a celebration for those of us who want to live in a country with due process, and that should include the people on the left. Whether or not you agree with the legal interpretation or understanding of what was going on in the Bundy case, the issues about property rights, the issues about federal government control of land, public lands versus state control of public lands, whether or not you agree on those issues, you should want to have an honest legal system. It's insane not to want that. So this is something that people on both the left and the right should be celebrating. But of course, the people on the left will not, because they're so caught up in their group identity politics and picking what side they're going to be on an issue based on the skin color of people. I mean, just take a look at that tweet yesterday from that tool at the Huffington Post criticizing Tim Scott. So, oh, look, they got their token Negro up there, essentially. And Tim Scott says, oh, well, you know what? I was there because I wrote that bill. I lobbied for that bill. I worked very hard for that bill. I got that bill passed. But, of course, feel free just to see nothing but my skin color, because that's all the liberals see. And when they look at the tax bill, all they see is the Marxist mindset of us versus them. And they're so blind to this that they can't celebrate even when their taxes are cut. I want to take a look at some of the additional responses to this tax bill. And something that is kind of an interesting situation. Maybe Jeff Sessions and the Justice Department ought to take a look at this. Rosie O'Donnell offered bribes to congressmen to oppose GOP tax bill. See, this is an interesting thing because, you know, when you listen to people talking about this whole Russian collusion story that's been ginned up by the people who want to continue to push impeachment, you know, the impeachment fervor that they've got going. As Alan Dershowitz said, you know, when you contribute money to somebody, you can do it as long as you're not, you know, having a quid pro quo. I'm going to give you this so that you do that. If somebody, you give people money and then they do something that is favorable to you, that's not a crime. But if you say to them, I'm going to give you this money and I want you to do this in response, that is a crime. That is a bribe. And so Rosie O'Donnell got on Twitter on Tuesday to incriminate herself. Now, let me tell you, if this was a conservative celebrity, they'd be going to jail. They'd be going to jail. O'Donnell went on Twitter Tuesday, offered $2 million cash specifically to Representative Susan Collins and Senator Jeff Flake to vote no. And she says, vote no. No, and I will not kill Americans for the sour rich. She doesn't even, maybe she was drunk tweeting. And then she says, no crap, $2 million cash each. And they point out in this article, whoever directly or indirectly corruptly gives, offers, or promises anything of any value to a public official, person who's been selected as a public, blah, 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 shall be fined no more than 3 times the monetary equivalent of the thing of value, or 15 years in prison, or both, Rosie. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. You know, we're talking about Jeff Sessions waking up. He's going to revise the investigation in Uranium One. He personally directed an independent third party to look at what happened with the Bundy trial. Massive corruption there is what happened. That's what they're going to find if they look at it honestly, if he doesn't send somebody down there that is a holdover from the Obama administration. But it's good news to see that that is coming up. And it's interesting to see the desperation of the left. The fact that Rosie O'Donnell would criminally try to bribe Susan Collins and Jeff Flake to voting no on the tax bill, offering them $2 million each on Twitter, publicly doing that. Now, you know, we can look at this as maybe she was drunk tweeting, maybe she is ignorant of the rules, but understand that Dinesh D'Souza innocently gave, I think it was, $20,000, $25,000 to a friend of his who was running for office. He wasn't aware that there's a limit of $2,500, $2,700 to individual candidates. And they gave him like 8 or 9 months of detention and a $30,000 fine. And you've got the Russian investigators, the Russian conspiracy theorists. Let's put it that way. Just call them the Russian. Instead of calling it the Mueller special prosecution, let's call it the Mueller conspiracy theorists. Because all they've got is a theory. They don't have any evidence. You know, we get called conspiracy theorists all the time because we talk about something. We say, look, this was actually put out there by the New York Times or by an investigator with another, you know, even CNN or the Washington Post. Occasionally they'll put something out that is there from an investigator and we'll say, you see what they just said? They said it quietly and nobody paid much attention to it. But yeah, now we know that ISIS is being armed by the federal government. So we'll include links like that and stuff. Where are the links from the Mueller conspiracy team to any of this stuff? Do they have any evidence of this? No. They've continued to say, well, we don't have any evidence of it, but we're still spending millions of dollars and tying up all of Washington to try to find something. And so what are they doing now? They're going after Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate who finished in fourth place. We need to talk to her about her Russia ties. Did she get a lot of money from Russia? Was there a massive social media campaign for Jill Stein? No, no. What did she do? She went to a third-party debate on RT. Oh, if RT goes out, as they point out, they said, we had this debate to give access to third-party candidates that were being ignored in the mainstream media. And so she goes to a third-party debate, which I guess they're going to be talking to the Libertarian candidate as well. But it's like, oh, what did you know? When did you know it? Were you ever on RT? If you were, you're going to have to talk to the FBI. You're going to have to talk to a congressional committee. This is the kind of McCarthyism that is happening. People on the left need to wake up to this. I mean, Jill Stein is hard left, Green Party, and she supports socialism, and she's probably to the left of Bernie Sanders. You know, she's an honest person. She's not out there colluding with Russians. I totally disagree with Jill Stein on pretty much every issue. But this is not the way that we want to politicize this stuff. Just like Alan Dershowitz says, he disagrees with Trump. But he says, do we really want to criminalize political differences? I don't want to make Jill Stein a criminal because I disagree with her. We can defeat her in the arena, the marketplace of ideas. We don't need to criminalize this. But that's what these Mueller conspiracy theorists are doing now, because she went to a debate. And as I've said before, one of the ways that the government has always censored people, whether it's Facebook or Google, the way we're seeing this now, I said, it's been done a long time with the debates. When you finally get on the ballot as the Libertarian Party or the Green Party or any independent, they have to go through a great deal of effort to get on the ballot. It's just given to the Democrats and Republicans. They don't have to get their party on the ballot. They're always on the ballot. And even if they've got a candidate who doesn't file on time, we have seen that when even after we went to the extra effort of getting on the ballot and put a candidate on the ballot, and then it was a two-way race between us and a Democrat, they didn't want to see us do well or win. So what they would do is they would put a Republican on after the fact. They'd say, just go to a judge, and the judge say, well, yeah, it's in the interest of the voters to have as many choices as possible, so we're going to waive that deadline for the Republican candidate. They don't waive anything for third-party candidates, except for your ability to be in a debate. And what they typically do is they say, well, the debates are being run by the media, or they're being run by a voters organization or whatever. So they get to decide. It's not us. It's not the government censoring these candidates. No, it is. It is. You make sure they're going to do it, and you make sure that your friends in those organizations don't include the candidates. So RT, to their credit, had third-party candidates on, so people could hear something other than the usual five or six questions that Fox and CNN and all these mainstream media companies always ask at the debates. They never get out into even anything like the war on drugs anymore, never even a topic. And so have some real debate over some real issues, and that gets you investigated by the FBI. That's the climate that we live in. But here's the real thing that's coming out. As they're engaging in these conspiracy theory witch hunts, there's some real stuff that's coming out. It's the uranium one, like I was just talking about. It's the crimes that we saw at the Bundy trial. And now this issue that's been percolating up, even coming from the left, Politico, doing the investigation of the Obama administration and its Hezbollah scandal, protecting Hezbollah from investigations because they wanted things to go well for their Iranian movement. That is something that is going to be a big deal. When the Obama administration comes in and shuts down law enforcement investigation to crimes of Hezbollah, running drugs and other things, because it contradicts their political agenda, that is an investigation that could be serious and will be serious. Former Obama officials who manufactured a media echo chamber to sell the Iran deal are now working to undermine a bombshell report that revealed how former President Barack Obama's administration derailed its own drug enforcement agency's efforts to stop Islamist terrorist group Hezbollah from developing a global narcotics syndicate. So you got this terrorist network that is moving into drugs. The DEA says, we're going to investigate them. And Obama says, no, you're not. That's something to investigate. The Democrats want to go out and take a look at their competition, Jill Stein, and investigate her for political reasons. But the real thing to investigate is the political investment of Obama into Hezbollah. And Rand Paul is now saying that this investigation of Obama officials colluding against Trump is worse than Watergate. He said this before, and he's now said it again. This is going to be the next Watergate. They can make all their films about the heroic Washington Post, the Pentagon Papers, or the Washington Post and Watergate, which are coming up from Clooney. And we've got the other one being released right away. But I tell you what, the big story is going to be these scandals in the Obama administration, working with Hezbollah, working with our own intelligence agencies in a political way. I mean, this is much bigger than hiring, you know, a half dozen people to break into the campaign office of somebody. They had the entire intelligence service and the FBI working for them to go after Trump. And why would they do that? Because their necks are in the noose if we find out the crimes that they committed with Uranium One. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's David Knight.
Keep on dying. Welcome back on this Friday before Christmas. And of course, we have a massive Christmas sale going on at InfoWarsStore.com. We had our 34-hour broadcast beginning of this week, and that ended, but the sales did not end, and we have now added free shipping, and we still have a lot of items heavily discounted at InfoWarsStore.com. Many of our most popular items, 50% off plus free shipping. Things like BrainForce Plus, Super Male Vitality. We also have Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, Secret 12, Super Blue, our all-natural toothpaste that has no fluoride in it, but we've added iodine and Nano Silver to combat bacteria that causes gum disease, tooth loss, and heart disease. Very, very popular product. Free shipping, 50% off on all of those. Also, some of our newest products, the Real Red Pill, Cell Force, Alpha Power, all of those are 50% off as introductory prices, along with free shipping. And you'll find things like ProPure products, 25% off the water filters Free shipping is also a big savings when you're shipping something that is large like that. So take a look at the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Part of our Christmas specials, many products that are 50%, some of them more. We've got Silver Bullet. Our colloidal silver is 67% off, and all of them with free shipping. All right, we've been talking about the Russian conspiracy theory and the fact that they want to keep moving against this. And I've said all along, the real conspiracy that we need to be worried about is the conspiracy and the collusion of the Democrats with law enforcement and intelligence. The fact that we have this massive, unprecedented intelligence surveillance of the American people, and that that would now become politicized. I want to play for you a clip of James Clapper. These guys just don't stop. The guy, remember, very famous for lying to Ron Wyden when being asked about Dragnet surveillance of the American people. He is still lying to people. Now he's lying about Russian collusion. And it was kind of interesting. You could see in his body language that he was lying, and it was less than 1 or 2 months that we had the massive document dumps from Snowden that really left James Clapper with egg on his face. But here's a clip of James Clapper, still politically involved, former intelligence agent that was politically involved with the Democrats prior to leaving office. Here's James Clapper.
You heard the president's speech today. He calls out Russia and China, describes them as rival powers to the U.S., but also says he wants to build a great partnership with them, and then had all this friendly stuff to say about his phone calls with Vladimir Putin this week. Is that a contradictory message?
Well, it is to me. I think this past weekend is illustrative of what a great case officer Vladimir Putin is. He knows how to handle an asset, and that's what he's doing with the president.
You're saying that Russia is handling President Trump as an asset?
This is CNN, of course. That's the appearance to me.
I just want to be clear here, though. You're saying that Russia is treating the president of the United States as an asset?
I'm saying this figuratively. Mm-hmm. I think you have to remember Putin's background. He's a KGB officer. That's what they do. They recruit assets. And I think some of that experience and instincts of Putin is coming to play here in his managing a pretty important account for him, if I could use that term, with our president.
Well, one thing's for sure. Vladimir Putin is much better at a poker face than James Clapper is. James Clapper never deceived anybody. I mean, you know, we're in big trouble when you got a guy who is lying and he can't do it convincingly as head of the CIA, because that's what these guys are supposed to do, right? Cloak and dagger, they're supposed to disguise what they're doing. He wasn't fooling anybody, certainly not the Russians, and he's not fooling us today. This is nothing but naked political criticism. Along with John Brennan now, former CIA director. Trump shows qualities that are usually found in narcissistic, vengeful autocrats. Very interesting. And so how does he, you know, does he have any specifics on these broad charges? What does it say about people who are CIA directors and intelligence directors? What kind of qualities do we look for in those types of people? As I said before, they suspect everybody. They conceal everything from everybody. They take pride in their ability to lie. I guess that's why James Clapper was such a failure. But what he criticized him on, and we'll talk about this later, he said the Trump administration's threat to retaliate against nations that exercise sovereign rights in the UN to oppose U.S. position on Jerusalem is beyond outrageous. Think about that for a moment. What he's saying is that we should not criticize other countries when they criticize our sovereign prerogative to acknowledge any other country or any put an embassy anywhere we wish. Isn't that our sovereign right? It was the UN that came together and said, no. We oppose you. We don't want you to have the sovereign ability to recognize a country or put your embassy anywhere you want. I mean, it bothers me. That bothers me more than the issue of where the embassy is. I don't really have a dog in that fight, but it bothers me when a supranational entity like the UN comes in and comes after our sovereignty. But this guy, Brennan, comes out and says, oh, it's Trump threatening their sovereignty. Sorry, That is a bold-faced lie. But if you want to know who's threatening sovereignty, Nigel Farage laid it on the line about 5 weeks ago. And it's time to go back and play that great clip from Nigel Farage where he's talking about George Soros. That's the guy that is colluding with everybody. He tweeted out, George Soros has spent billions in the EU to undermine the nation state. This is where real international political collusion is. Let's play that clip.
Mr. Farage, 2.5 minutes.
Thank you. As Mr. Moscovici said at the start of this, the leak of all these papers and lists of people with offshore holdings has come about because of the Society of Investigative Journalists. But what's not been said this morning, and I think is relevant, is that the funding of these investigations came from one George Soros. Now, I say this at a time, I'm going to come back to so what, and it may have some personal interest for you as well. I say this at a time when the use of money and the influence it may have had on the Brexit result or the Trump election has reached a level of virtual hysteria. Just last week, the Electoral Commission in the UK launched an investigation to find out whether the Leave campaign took offshore money or Russian money. This came about as a result of questions asked in the House of Commons by one Ben Bradshaw, somebody linked to an organisation called Open Society. I just wonder, when we're talking about offshore money, when we're talking about political subversion, when we're talking about collusion, I wonder whether we're looking in the wrong place. Yeah. And I say that because George Soros recently gave Open Society, his organisation, which of course campaigns for free movement of peoples and supports supranational structures like the European Union, he recently gave it $18 billion. And his influence here and in Brussels is truly extraordinary. Open Society boast that they had 42 meetings last year with the European Commission. They've even published a book of reliable friends in the European Parliament. And there are 226 names on that list, including yours, sir. I thought you'd find this interesting. We even Mr. Verhofstadt lobbying on behalf of Mr. Soros at the Conference of Presidents in a battle that is going on with Viktor Orbán, Prime Minister of Hungary. If we're going to have a debate and we're going to talk about full political and financial transparency, well, let's do it. So I should be writing today to all 226 of you, asking some pretty fair questions. Have you ever received funds, directly or indirectly, from Open Society? How many of their events have you attended? Could you please give us a list of the meetings of all the representatives, including George Soros yourself? And I think this Parliament should now set up a special committee to look into all of this. And I say that because I fear we could be looking at the biggest level of international political collusion in history.
That's right. That's where the collusion is. That's where the collusion is there. It is also with the Democrats and law enforcement. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. You just heard the warning from Nigel Farage saying that the thing that we should be concerned about in terms of international collusion, in terms of manipulating of elections, are George Soros. And as he talked to that body, he says, and one of the guys who jeered at him, he says, I've got something to say about you. His name was on the list of legislators who had been on the take from George Soros. That's why it is so important for us to show the real crimes and collusions, not the Russian conspiracy theory that's going on. But the Democrats are fueled, as they say on the Hill. A headline says, impeachment fervor fuels Democrat tensions. Well, it's the only thing that they've got. And they're going to focus on this, and I hope they keep focusing on it. Because the more they do this, the more they come after even people like Jill Stein with the Green Party, the more absurd they look, the more out of touch they look, the more obstructionist they become. And it only highlights their crimes. This is bouncing back upon them. And this is where this is going to head in the next year. We've now had a judge dismissing another frivolous lawsuit against President Trump. Remember, they came after him over the emoluments clause in the Constitution, claiming that because he had foreign businesses, and he didn't totally divest himself from these in the way that pleased them. They came after this and said, no, you're going to be taking money from foreign dignitaries and foreign governments. If they stay in any of your hotels, that's going to be considered a bribe. Yeah. Well, the judge said, this is nonsense. Dismiss that trial. So they're losing everywhere. They are desperate. They're grabbing at straws. And there are big crimes with Obama and Hezbollah, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and her also, there's a Hezbollah connection there as well. When we start looking at that, the connections with George Soros, there are massive crimes that were committed by the criminals of the Obama administration, and those things are going to be exposed. Meanwhile, they are upset at the tax cuts that were passed this last week by the GOP. And I want to play a clip for you. Yesterday, we played some clips from Jake Tapper, from Rachel Maddow. I want to play a clip for you from Chris Matthews. He said, this tax celebration, this is a lot of just accumulation of several absurd things that Chris Matthews said yesterday after the tax bill went through. One of the things he said, it was like a North Korean parade led by an Ethiopian dictator. So here's Hardball's Chris Matthews.
Next, could yesterday's display at the White House, the pig out over the tax cut, trouble for the Russia investigation? Republicans had no problem lavishing praise on this president. With those same, look at them all up there like lemmings. Are they going to back him on firing Mueller? Look at them. Looks like a North Korean parade. Welcome back to Harvard. It was like a scene out of Julius Caesar yesterday on the South Lawn of the White House. One by one, Republican leaders lined up to praise His Eminence, the imperious Donald Trump. You know, I don't know where to start. Except I remember Haile Selassie used to get the Lion of Judah, you know, these incredible praises.
Wait for the Hitler reference.
I got a photo up about
it's coming,
why
I'm
they,
sure.
Look at the faces. They weren't like North Korean soldiers. Look at all the smiles in unison, synchronized swimming. There's Roy Blunt.
They're laughing at you, Chris.
The guy from Young from Alaska and Vice President Pence, they're all there just grinning exactly the same proper Republican way.
I get that they were excited. I get that they liked tax cuts. But why do you actually have this ritualized fluffing of the Orange God King? I mean, and I also understand this is an interesting, you know, tactic, you know, to keep him in line. But I had the feeling as I was watching this, like, do you understand you're doing this in public? We can see what you were doing here. I mean, this is great. Paul,
what
you got your
doing?
Tax cuts, but have a
they
little
were standing
pride.
There applauding.
Just a little bit of dignity left when all this
you know, they
over.
Say
dignity? You were talking about dignity? These are the people. This is Chris Matthews, who talked about the thrill going up and down his legs whenever he saw Barack Obama speak. They're standing there, you know, stiff, like a bunch of whiteys clapping, okay? I mean, what's the deal with this? It isn't like this is the cremation of care or something, you know, where these guys typically hang out, these guys at MSNBC. What was the problem with that? Oh, look at this. They have no dignity. I mean, they're standing there clapping. They have people making speeches, talking about how they did something for the American people. They are desperate. And when you look at those types of charges and you look at them saying, look at this, this is like some kind of a worshiping of the Sun King. And they're just standing there clapping and talking about how they got this through. It is a big victory. And MSNBC just can't handle it. Let me tell you what this is really about. You know, they were laughing at you, Chris. They were laughing at MSNBC. And here's one of the reasons. There's a big population shift that's going on towards the Sun Belt. We've talked about this. A big population decline out of Illinois, people moving to low tax states. That's a big part of this. And you know what? This is about the Electoral College, Chris. Yeah, baby. The Electoral College, that thing that you lost this last time, the thing that really is the basis of the presidential election. And so as you have a population shift to lower tax states where the people say, you know what, we don't want a lot of government control, a lot of government taxation, so we're going to leave these northeastern states and we're going to head to places where there's lower taxes and more freedom. What do you think they're going to do? You think those tax refugees are going to vote for higher taxes, or are they going to vote for lower taxes? The Texas delegation stands to gain 3 seats. Florida will gain 2 new seats. Arizona, Colorado, North Carolina, and Oregon are all expected to add 1 seat. Illinois will lose at least 1 and possibly 2 seats. in terms of a population shift out of the high-tax states. And again, that was part of the mastermind effort behind taking away the state and local tax deductions for these high-tax states. It's only going to accelerate that demographic trend. And it's the rich people in those areas that are going to be the ones who are hurt the most, the ones who are always bragging about the fact that they want to have their taxes raised. Well, the blue bloods in the blue states got their taxes raised, so they need to stop singing the blues. They got exactly what they wanted. Now, the people who are middle class in those areas, they're going to see their standard deduction doubled. They're going to see their taxes simplified for that. I mean, they'll still have their mortgage deduction. The state and local taxes will be capped at $10,000. If the state and local places want to tax you more than that, we're not going to subsidize that at the federal government's level. But the other part of this, they keep saying this isn't going to do anything for the economy. And as I point out, the mere expectation of this for the last year has supercharged the economy, the stock market. Economic growth has been right up to 4%. It may be 4% in the most recent measurements here. But it's also the reactions of foreign governments that are telling us this is going to be really good for the Americans and bad for us. Germans are fearing a huge loss of jobs from U.S. tax cuts, reports Breitbart. Say German economists are warning that the tax overhaul bill will mean that, quote, significant amounts of new investment and jobs will shift from Europe to the United States. The U.S., previous to this, has had the highest corporate tax rate, 39%. In Germany, it was 28%. And the European average is 20.1%. Now we have a 21% average taxation. And so what they're saying is the tax competition, said one economist, will have a new dimension. This is a German economist. He said this in a report heading, Germany loses out on U.S. tax reform. That's exactly what this was designed to do. So the losers are the rich liberals in the high tax states. And Germany and China and other European Union economies, they say the potential capital influx could be as high as $42 billion. And one other individual said you get a windfall for having capital in the U.S., so that will cause investors to invest. It is a pro-capital formation tax bill. And this is why other countries are so wary about what the investment landscape will look like. This isn't just a tax cut. This is an investment in the economy, in the private economy. Under Obama, the only people that were getting new jobs were the people who were going to work for the federal government. Everybody else was having to lay people off, lose profits. Also in China, the Chinese state media is saying China is not ready for head-on competition with the United States. This is the Chinese state newspaper, the Global Times, saying that they must learn from the U.S. on how to grow their economy. And this is what the Chinese say. They say President Trump will confront the threat without having the upper hand. China will have to confront the threat from the United States without having the upper hand economically or politically. The United States, says the Chinese government newspaper, has been disappointed in itself. The Trump administration is seeking an economic resurgence to boost national morale. It suggests that Trump's America First policy is as nationalist as China's policy. See, they've been nationalist all along. It was under Carter and under Obama that we had economic malaise. Nobody had confidence in America. America was done, right? Then we had Reagan, and now we've got Trump. Tax cuts, and the economy is back. So is optimism. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
In a world of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. Yesterday we played the inquisition of fake Jake Tapper at CNN of Senator Pat Toomey, Republican of Pennsylvania, saying, this is awful. You guys always cut taxes, and then you say, now we're going to have to cut entitlement programs because we got a deficit here. Yeah, we're going to have to cut spending. And Toomey laid it out very succinctly. He said, we have to invest, and I'm going to defend the proposition that we're going to invest in things that are going to cause growth. And then, yes, we need to look at entitlement. But we're not going to hurt people who are on this program or people who are about to retire on Social Security. This is going to be done in a gradual way. But we cannot have expenditures that outgrow the intakes of the government. Even though we have record tax receipts, we still are increasing the deficit. And Darren McBreen has a great special report that he put together showing, is there really any way that we can cut the entitlement programs? Maybe there is. Here's that report from Darren McBreen.
I know people, they work three jobs, and they live next to somebody who doesn't work at all. And the person who's not working at all and has no intention of working at all is making more money and doing better than the person that's working his and her ass off. And it's not going to happen. Not going to happen.
Give me my food stamps.
Do you really want to work, or you just want to get a free check?
I just want to get a free check.
There's a sign behind you that says Waverly Job Center. Do you have any intention of going in to get a job, or are you just going to get the food stamps?
Not looking for a job.
Why should I have to go work at retail and deal with snobby customers? Why? Why should I have to dare choose to do that?
We called the Department of Children and Families to see what they've been doing to help. DCF says Hillsborough Kids Incorporated has been helping by paying Adams' rent, even providing her furniture. Adams says it isn't enough.
Somebody needs to pay for all my children and mine. And Gary, all our suffering, all our pain, somebody needs to be held accountable, and they need to pay.
I honestly don't want to work, and I'm not going to. Can't force me.
I need my food stamps. I need them. Okay, this is not a joke. Just give me my food stamps. That's all I'm asking for.
They are not incapacitated in any way, or they don't have a mental or physical disability that's documented and or could be observable.
More counties will join them as federal exemptions to the requirements expire now that unemployment is below 10% for each affected county.
I felt really bad about being on food stamps for a while. They're just for people who really, really need it, I thought, and I'm like living this flippant lifestyle in San Francisco.
Do you think you really, really need it?
Well, yeah, and eventually I just sort of realized that even though I'm 24, like, I still have responsibilities, I still have, like, hopes for my future, and if I need to be on food stamps to make that happen, then maybe I do really need it.
Are you employed?
No.
How do you feel about that?
I'm comfortable with it, and I feel like I don't need to look for one because I get a check from the government every month.
Do you feel guilty about using your food stamp card when you have $850,000 in the bank?
No, I don't. I'm going by the rules, and if they need to change their rules, they can change their rules, but I don't see I'm doing anything wrong.
How much do you collect in benefits?
I get $780 in food stamps, $500 in tennis, and I get Medicaid and WIC.
Give me my food stamps.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
That's a great report from Darren McBreen. And what it illustrates is the failure of bureaucratic institutions to get the money to the people who really need it. That's why I prefer to talk about charity rather than entitlements. That's why it should be private rather than the government doing it at the highest, most distant level. That's where the corruption comes in. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. You know, the last couple of days after we've seen a tax cut, massive tax cut for the American people, an investment in our economy, what have we seen from the Democrat leadership? We've seen Nancy Pelosi saying, this bill is theft. We've seen Chuck Schumer say they're going to rue the day. We've seen Bernie Sanders say they have looted the treasury. They've looted the treasury. Well, you've been looting our family budgets for a long time. And if that's the best you can do, you guys are going to be facing some tough elections coming up. But then we also see the people like Chris Matthews and his group there watching the president and Republicans out there celebrating the victory, standing there clapping, and they're saying, look at them. They're marching around like he's like some kind of an Ethiopian dictator. He's got to come up with something other than Hitler. They've called him Hitler so many times that it doesn't have any effect anymore. Goodwin's Law. But they came up with every analogy, said, this is disgraceful. Look at this celebration. They're standing there speaking about what they just got accomplished in spite of all the opposition from Chris Matthews, the big loser, and the mainstream media like him, and the opposition from the Democrats. We're not one single Democrat. And we're talking about the people who like to say, well, you know, I'm a Democrat, but I really support families. Like, you know, people like Joe Manchin, who is now starting to take down. He's going totally political. He went absolutely nuts trying to defend Al Franken. You know, trying to grab Al Franken and say, don't leave, Al. Don't leave. Please don't leave us. He shouldn't resign. He shouldn't resign. And this guy has just totally gone Democrat. I was going to say off the rails, but Democrat is the best way to put this. So when they're sitting there hurling all these insults at the people who are celebrating their legislative agenda here, we've got former Obama Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes and another coming after the Republicans, saying, let's save these pictures because we'll use them for their obituary, And, of course, one of the guys that was there was Scalise, who was nearly killed by one of their followers who hated Republicans so much. They have politicized this. They have brought in hatred, envy, bigotry against people so much that they inspired a shooting. And Scalise nearly died, Steve Scalise, the whip. And he said, you may want to reconsider your rhetoric, as one of them says. Yeah, let's save these pictures and we'll put them in there when the president is indicted. And Dan Pfeiffer, that was a former Obama White House advisor. So you got a couple of White House advisors. You got Ben Rhodes, who is National Security Advisor. You've got Dan Pfeiffer. And they're tweeting out in public, oh, yeah, we're going to indict these guys. Oh, save it for their obituary. And Scalise says, oh, you might want to tone down your rhetoric a little bit. And, of course, as they point out in the Daily Caller, Pfeiffer didn't specify what Trump would be indicted for. They haven't figured out the crime yet. They're just investigating the man and trying to come up with some kind of a process crime. This is the never-ending Russian conspiracy theory. But I want to take a little bit at the Obama White House. Remember their first Christmas there? Remember how they had the Christmas tree that had a ornament with Chairman Mao on it? We've come a long way, haven't we? I haven't seen the Trump Christmas tree, but I don't think that he's got one of Chairman Mao on there this year. And this goes back to their first Christmas, 2009. As it was reported by Fox News at the time, they said they had controversial ornaments. One depicting Chairman Mao, another one that showed a drag queen, head of lettuce. Another one showed a picture of Mount Rushmore with Obama's head pasted onto the side of Washington, Lincoln, Jefferson, and Roosevelt's faces. And Michelle Obama explained it this way. She said, we took about 800 ornaments that were left over from the previous administration. I guess they must have had a lot more ornaments before Hillary and Bill left, because I imagine they took a bunch of Christmas ornaments with them. If they were any good, they took them along with the silver and anything else that they could get out of there. And I'm not exaggerating. I mean, they really did steal stuff from the White House. Look it up. But anyway, they took what was left over that wasn't stolen by Bill and Hillary, about 800 ornaments. They said they sent them to 60 local community groups, community organizers throughout the country, who, of course, would want to decorate them to look like Chairman Mao, and asked them to decorate them. And then they had an 18.5-foot Douglas fir tree that was heralded as environmentally friendly, suitable for hugging. It had an organic tree skirt. It had LED lights and so forth. And then one person responded to this at the time and said, can we have one aspect of this White House that isn't trying to make a political statement? That was after he had been there less than a year. And we've now had 8 years of everything that Barack Obama was doing was a political statement. And also embodying his hatred and envy and his groupthink towards everybody else. That is the true legacy of Obama. It isn't Obama tax, Obamacare. The true legacy is the politicization of everything. That's why we have this environment that we live under right now. That's what he's created, setting every group against every other group with his identity politics. Would have been far worse if Hillary had won. But as they're worshiping Chairman Mao, I want to tell you what Christmas is like and the legacy of Chairman Mao. They have banned Christmas celebrations because they said it is a cultural invasion of China by the West. They have decreed that Chinese Communist Party members, quote, resist the rampant Western festival, unquote, said it is not going to build a good image for party officials. And, of course, they still have a lot of massive posters and all kinds of memorabilia that they sell of Chairman Mao. At least they did when I was there 10 years ago. I was absolutely surprised. I was like, really? I mean, this guy who had the Cultural Revolution, who starved tens of millions of you to death, and you're still got this cult of worship of this leader? They point out years ago, Chinese police would target only openly Christian acts during Christmas, such as affirmations of faith. For example, in 2014, Chinese police arrested a woman for holding up a sign in public that read, "God, who loves the world so much, is calling Xi Jinping and others," referring to the leader and first lady. So she gets arrested for that message of love, that message of peace. They say this month, however, police have raided a church, arrested 13 Christians for praying at an illegal service Sunday in Guangdong. No specifics on the charges, you know, what is it? But they also confiscated illegal Bibles and Christian material found in the church. Illegal Bibles. They say that they do allow holiday lights and some secular aspects in Shanghai, places where they have a lot of foreigners and they host foreign businesses. Chinese citizens, though, are not allowed to decorate. And they're not even allowed to make or sell artificial snow to observe the holiday. And they punish that with a heavy fine. I mean, is that because it's a white Christmas? You know, when you look at this, I think one of the stories that we need to remember this time of year, and I did the report, of course, yesterday, how they used the Christmas vacation to push through the Federal Reserve bill while many people were out. You can see that report on Real News with David Knight YouTube channel. It's a wonderful lie, showing the parallels between the way the crooked banker in that movie, It's a Wonderful Life, manipulated people with bank crashes and so forth, and how they manipulated people into passing the Federal Reserve. But there's other stories about Christmas. Remember the Christmas truce of 1914? World War I had just started that summer, so they hadn't even finished but about 6 or 7 months of the war. And it was just getting to the point where they entered the stalemate of trench warfare. And it hadn't really gotten hardened at that point. And at Christmas time, the Christians who were with the German army and the Christians who were with the British army, some of them started on the German side, they started singing Silent Night. And eventually they started yelling out, "Don't shoot." They got out of their trenches after, to make a long story short, it spread to 100,000 troops, and they had a Christmas truce. And once the word got out about it, the German and British officers were so upset for fraternizing with the enemy. You got to keep this war going on. No, no. The slave is your brother. That's what fraternizing means. That was the message of Christ. That's the message of Christmas. One of peace, one of brotherhood that the people at the top don't want you to have, whether it's Obama or the leaders who got them into World War I. David Knight on this Friday before Christmas. It's too late, perhaps, in most cases to get your products before Christmas, but we do have free shipping, and you can get them before the end of the year with free shipping. We have at InfoWarsStore.com 50% off of many of our most popular products and our three newest products, along with free shipping. Let me tell you about some of the products that are on sale. Super Male Vitality, Brain Force Plus, Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix. That's the way to take your vitamins and minerals without having to swallow a lot of pills. Great tasting. Of course, you can make it taste any way you want. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, 50% off with free shipping, as are these other products. Some of our newest products, the Real Red Pill, Alpha Power, Cell Force, all of those, 50% off with free shipping. We also have Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula, 50% off with free shipping. All the Super Blue toothpaste and mouthwash, fluoride-free, but we add iodine and nano silver to kill bacteria in your mouth. That's what creates gum disease. It leads to tooth loss as well as to heart disease eventually. And we have all InfoWars Life select products, 50% off plus free shipping. Take a look at the specials that we have, part of our massive Christmas specials, plus free shipping at InfoWarsStore.com. You know, we're just talking about the tax code and the tax victory and why people, the rich people in the high tax states, the state and local taxes, again, you still have your mortgage deduction. They lowered the maximum amount if you buy a home that used to be if you couldn't deduct the mortgage for over $1 million. Now they've lowered that a little bit to $750,000. However, if you're still grandfathered in with the older house, if you have that, they're not going to take away that mortgage deduction. And it isn't really going to affect anybody but the rich people. As the statistics show, it's the rich people who typically are begging for more taxes. At least that's what they say. They get very upset when you actually raise their taxes. The rich people are saying, oh, no, I don't pay enough taxes. Please raise my taxes. Okay, you got it. And so their state and local taxes will be capped at $10,000 if they itemize. Most of the people who are going to be middle class will be taking advantage of the doubled standard deduction. Have a simpler form, and it will save them money. Of course, you have the option to do either one, but I think most people find that that's going to save them money. Nevertheless, they're out there complaining about this. Why are they complaining? Well, there was an article on Politico, and they tried to make this sound very scientific. And it is very scientific, because it is a scientific method of control by the Democrats. Politico says, why is the GOP tax bill so unpopular? Well, maybe it's all relative. And they say, social science research explains why the Republicans are losing the battle of public opinion over a tax cut. They want to keep telling everybody that the general public thinks that this is a bad idea. Quite frankly, I don't believe that. They told us that Donald Trump is going to lose in a landslide as well. Polls can be wrong. Polls can be deliberately wrong. We call those push polls. Frequently, they'll go out and conduct polls, make sure that they select a population to poll in a way that they're going to get results that look favorable to their side, because there's a psychology in that as well. You want to be on the winning side, right? Well, if the vast majority of people think A, then I must be wrong if I think B. So they'll give you a false choice between two options, and then they'll go out there and rig a poll to tell people, oh, no, you don't really want your taxes cut. You don't really want that. And if that doesn't work, they'll tell you, you don't want this because your neighbor's going to get a little bit more than you are. That's what they really come down to. They say relative deprivation. This is the way the political scientists are putting this out there. Relative deprivation can produce an especially strong reaction when a policy seems to make one's own group, there we are, back to groupthink again, worse off compared with some other groups of people. This group element seems to be present in people's thinking about the GOP tax bill. Why would that be? Well, that's because the media and the Democrats constantly push you into a group and constantly get you to compare yourself to another group, not thinking about whether or not you'll be better off or not, not going back to JFK's big tax cut where he says, hey, a rising tide lifts all boats. So don't worry about this. That was the Democrat Party that under JFK. Perhaps in many ways, it was more free market and libertarian than the Republican establishment today. But now, today, they would say, wait a minute. Yeah, both of the boats are going up, but that guy's got a bigger boat than I do. And it's higher than mine. So he's going up higher than I am. Anyway, they go on to say, this group element seems to be present in people's thinking about the GOP tax bill. Since most people tell pollsters, or maybe the pollsters are telling most people, That the wealthy and large corporations will benefit disproportionately from the tax rewrite, it's quite likely that many citizens have concluded that this round of tax relief will benefit them, the wealthy and large corporations, more than us, average Americans. See, this is, they call this relative deprivation. I call it tactical envy. Tactical envy has been the strategy of the Democrats. That and groupthink, divide and conquer, and envy. Those are the basis of what the Democrat Party and other socialist and communist Marxist groups have always been about. Class warfare, class envy. It's all about tactical envy. You know, they had this big deal last year, didn't they, about let's get the minimum wage up to $15 an hour. Let's fight for 15. Let's do this. Well, several of these corporations that are out there giving bonuses to all their employees of $1,000, and two or three of them have said, and we are going to raise our minimum wage to $15 an hour. See, if you invest in the infrastructure, if you grow the economy, if you lift all the boats, that means that these people can get their $15 an hour. But they don't like it that way, because if they were to fight for it, if they were to threaten people, if they were to use the union to make these demands, then they would have a political victory that would empower the unions while creating an unsustainable economy, just like we see with entitlements. You cannot spend more money than you take in indefinitely. You eventually run out of other people's money. That's the way Margaret Thatcher characterized socialism, and we still see it that way. They said that psychologists also find relative deprivation can be especially powerful when it appears to violate some standard of fairness. Ah, isn't that the way they always come? This isn't fair. We're going to have a fair tax code, so forth and so on. This is all the rhetoric of the left. And you have to understand that even though they're couching this in terms of relative deprivation and so forth, this is a scientific, psychological approach to population control that has always been used by politicians, by socialists, by Marxists. It is the way that they manipulate you. It's a very definite form of manipulation. When we look at what's going on in Venezuela right now, a great example of it. And they talk about a woman who was once the Marxist President Maduro's prosecutor general. When she protested the country's Supreme Court assumption that all powers were reserved to the Congress last month, then she said they came after her. They froze her assets. They tried to imprison her. They banned her from traveling. She managed to escape. And now she's put out a nearly 500-page report about the last thing that the socialists take from you. Or maybe it's the first thing, but it is one of the many things that they take from you, and that is the rule of law. They don't just take your money, they take your freedom, they take your dignity, they take the rule of law.
Waging war on corruption. It's David Knight.
Welcome back. We're just talking about Venezuela as being a perfect example of the end state of socialism. And I want to tell you a little bit more detail about what actually happened there. Again, as I said, this is a woman who was the prosecutor general. She was protesting the powers that were being taken by the new government because they never get enough of your money. They never get enough power. And so what they did was they dismissed her. As New American points out, she was lucky to get out alive. The court froze all of her personal assets. Then they barred her from leaving the country. So in a communist country, they put the walls up to keep people in, not to keep them out. When you put the walls up to keep people out, that is an expression of sovereignty. But it is an expression of tyranny when you put the walls up to keep people in. Her replacement then as prosecutor general found out that she was still trying to leave the country, and they almost got her, but she and her husband jumped on a speedboat, got to Aruba, and then fled to Colombia. Now she has put out a 500-page report about the atrocities of the Marxist Maduro's criminal activities. And it's things like using the police force to attack, capture, torture, maim, then murder innocent people that they once believed were protected by the rule of law. No, that doesn't happen. And as I point out, one of the officers came in and said, we can't wait for an arrest warrant. Does this sound familiar to what we heard this last week or so when the issue about seizing the Trump administration's emails and the Mueller Russian conspiracy team went in and grabbed this stuff, and Alan Dershowitz said, what is he doing? It is the easiest thing in the world to get a search warrant. It's just a mere formality. Why wouldn't he do that? Well, they don't care. Because, see, where we're headed with these Democrats and the corrupt officials in law enforcement and the surveillance state that are working with them is they don't need any arrest warrant. They don't need a search warrant to do dragnet surveillance of the American people, to lie to the face of a senator. And, of course, as I played that clip many times, it's a very small group of people that Michael Hayden, who'd been director of the NSA and the CIA, was talking to. So he kind of let his guard down. He was very candid and frank. He made some amazing statements saying, hey, I didn't need that piece of the Patriot Act. I had a direct order from the president. Yeah, he said, like, I had an order from the president. So the president and I decided that we would do this. He said, we don't follow bad people. We follow interesting people. Yeah, yeah. And so that's where all of this stuff goes. And he criticized Ron Wyden for even asking James Clapper the question that James Clapper obviously lied about. Could not look him in the eye, had to look down, was looking down at his paper. Oh, no, not to my knowledge. No, we're not, you know. And, yeah, he was surveilling everybody. And Michael Hayden, in that very candid discussion, said, this was, I blame Ron Wyden for that, for putting him in that position. Ron Wyden and all those senators and all their staff knew that there was dragnet surveillance going on. And he put him in a difficult position there by asking him that question. And it's like, that just shows how broad the corruption is. And it's like, great that somebody would ask him that question. You know, I disagree with Ron Wyden on pretty much everything. He was one of the guys that came out to held up the bill, made the House vote on it a second time because he and Bernie Sanders came out and said, no, you can't give even a little tiny tax cut to homeschoolers who earn their money, pay the taxes on their money, if they're able to then save some money, and if that money then goes up in value a little bit, they can't use that for their kids' education. We're going to still tax that. So, Ron Wyden is usually on the wrong side of freedom, but he was on the right side this time, and kudos to him for asking that. And shame on the rest of the senators for not asking that, and they should not be shamed by Michael Hayden, because this is where we go. When you can't wait for arrest warrants, when you don't care about the rule of law, where you're going to head as to a situation like we have in Venezuela, where the people there are being murdered. And that's where this always goes with these communist dictatorships. Communism is merely an excuse for tyrants to take power. From each according to his ability, to each according to his need. And it's like, no, it just, you know, if they were to tell you that I'm going to take all your money, I'm going to take all your freedom, I'm going to take the rule of law, I'm going to take everything, you're going to be my slave, and nobody would go for that. But you have to come up with some kind of a nice little class warfare, get people envious of each other, get different groups hating each other because of their skin color and so forth. Yeah, that works. That always works. That's a way to get power. That's what dictators do. Let's take a look at Facebook because that's one of their tools. It's very interesting. Yesterday, an article came out. It was on the Drudge Report. Facebook has now ditched the fake news flag after admitting that that actually made their problem worse. Backfired on them, right? And we've talked about this a long time. Alex has said when the military would come in and say to their people, no, you can't go to that website. You can't go to InfoWars and look there. It's forbidden information. All it did was make more people go. And so when Facebook comes in and says, well, because Snopes says that this is wrong, or PolitiFact says that the sky isn't blue. The sky's not blue. And so this is fake news that the sky is blue. So they put a little flag there warning you. This is disputed by our third-party fact checkers, like Snopes. So they put that out there, and they found that it actually backfired. It made people want to read that news more. So it actually had the opposite effect, as we always know that it does. So what they're going to do is they're going to get rid of the red news flags. They said it made fabricated media reports appear to be more believable. That's the credibility of PolitiFact and Snopes. When you say that something isn't real, People go, want to read it. The social network began showing off disputed warnings next to articles in December. Didn't take them very long to realize that it was not working, that it was backfiring, in order to alert people that third-party fact-checking websites deemed them misleading. Isn't it interesting how much Facebook is monitoring what you're doing? Oh, let's put this out there. Tell people not to read that article. Are they reading the article? Oh, they're reading the article. What do we do now? And they're looking at everything you do. This is so contemptible, the way they monitor you. So now what they're going to do is show a section, a selection of related articles next to the offending story instead. So they're going to try give you other choices. Please read this. You do it with a soft movement. See, this type of stuff, as I've said before, Hayden and the other people who say, we were just collecting their metadata. We weren't actually transcribing your phone calls. They don't have the time to do that. They don't want to do that. Most of the stuff that you're saying, they're not interested in. But they are interested in what you share, what you click on, what you do, where you go, the people you meet with. That's called metadata. It's called activity-based intelligence. It's called human domain analytics. It's all part of the fastest-growing intelligence field called geospatial intelligence. And by collecting the metadata, that is the most valuable thing if you're not an interesting person like Donald Trump or his family or his transition team. They want to listen to those interesting people, not the bad people. And they want to get the metadata from the public because that's when they find out if their phony propaganda narrative is working or not. They can do that algorithmically. They can't go in and they don't want to take the time to look at all the cat videos that you're sharing, but they do want to know what other articles you're sharing, and they monitor that very closely. And so they're going to give you, they say, more context. Yeah. Overall, they say, we're making progress. Demoting false news, as identified by our fact checkers, is one of our best weapons. Hear that? That's a quote from Facebook. One of our best weapons. Demoted articles typically lose 80% of their traffic. Folks, Facebook is weaponized propaganda. It is weaponized propaganda. Bloomberg has an article, How Facebook Political Unit Enables the Dark Art of Digital Propaganda. Yes, it is weaponized propaganda. Now there they're talking about a specific group. They name names. They say under fire for Facebook's role as a platform for political propaganda, the co-founder Zuckerberg has punched back, saying his mission is above partisanship. Quote, we hope to give all people a voice and create a platform for all ideas. That's why they talk about this demoting of fake news and putting up other articles. They said that's our most powerful weapon. Oh, no. Yeah, they don't have an agenda, do they? What a bunch of authoritarian Orwellian liars they are. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this Friday, December 22nd, 2017. Shortest day of the year here in the Northern Hemisphere, longest day of the year in the Southern Hemisphere. So it's Christmas and the summer for those of you down under. But we have a lot of Christmas specials at InfoWarsStore.com and free shipping on a wide variety of products, many of them 50% off or more with free shipping. But we also have some other ones I haven't mentioned earlier. Myco ZX has been out of stock. It is now back in stock and discounted 25% off with free shipping. We also have some things like Propure products. Big water filters, 25% off plus free shipping. That's a massive savings for the ProPure products. And then many other things like Secret 12 or Vitamin B12, Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, Brain Force Plus, Super Male Vitality, all those and many more, 50% off with free shipping. Take a look at the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. That's what funds our operation here. Allows us to add programs like this in the morning and in the afternoon, War Room. And it's what keeps us independent, and that is very important. We were just talking about Facebook and their weaponized propaganda, actually saying that demoting articles and putting other stuff up is one of our best weapons. So what keeps us independent and products that keep you healthy? These are the best products you're going to find in terms of health issues. You're not going to find anything anywhere any better, and now you can find them 50% off plus free shipping at InfoWarsStore.com. Let's go back to Facebook. Because I just read you about the fact they realize putting red flags and saying Snopes says that they don't agree with this. that actually increased traffic. And they're measuring everything that you do. So they said, all right, we're just going to put up other articles and we're going to demote these articles because we find that's a very effective weapon. But then they tell you, oh, we don't have an agenda. We're perfectly neutral. Yeah, let me tell you something. You know, when you're talking about news, you talk about all these people say, yeah, we just report the facts or what. The very articles that they pick to talk about, just as they're demoting certain things and promoting others, they're doing that deliberately with Facebook. Even if you have to do it under time constraints, it reflects your political opinion. The articles that I choose to talk about here, or the ones that I choose to talk about first, that's a matter of prioritization. What I think is most important, what I think is important is going to be a reflection of my political bias. I'll tell you why I think it's important. That's part of this. I'll read the news and tell you why that's there. But anybody that tells you that they're completely objective is either lying to themselves or lying to you. And that especially is true of the media. Because the very stories that they pick, even if they did it in the most neutral, even-handed way possible, the stories that they choose to report on. Go back and look at the big three networks, ABC, CBS, NBC. They all reported on the same thing. And interestingly enough, they all had exactly the same angle on it, too. You didn't have any diversity of opinion, and they don't want that to happen in social media either. And so there is this collusion, this crony censorship that's been set up between Facebook and Google and Twitter and the government. And I'll tell you about that in just a moment. But let's take a look at the way Bloomberg is explaining this. Talking about Facebook's political unit that they have. They have a political unit, but they're not political, of course. And Bloomberg calls them on that. They say it's a dark side of digital propaganda. Now, what Bloomberg tries to do is to try to put a Republican spin on this. What we've seen is just the opposite. We've seen them coming after President Trump and after conservatives censoring their material, especially with Twitter. But they like to portray this as a Republican operation. And, you know, in a sense, I'm kind of fine with that because I want the Democrats to wake up to how these platforms are being used and abused by government propaganda. And if it takes them looking at this from a partisan way to get them interested in it, that's good, as long as they won't say, we need to take that over for our own stuff. I mean, that's typically what happens with politicians and political units. They'll look at something that isn't really corrupt, and instead of fixing it, they'll say, I need that tool. And they'll do their own, or they'll take it over and leave it in place. So we don't want to do that. We want to have something that is going to stop this kind of government censorship. But they talk about the unit, and they say that it's run by Katie Harbath, a former Republican digital strategist who worked with Rudy Giuliani's 2008 presidential campaign. And they've been going over the globe, helping political clients everywhere using the company's powerful digital tools. Okay, sometimes they say using troll armies. Yes, they use troll armies. It's not just the Russians. It's Facebook and others. They say they've gone from India and Brazil to Germany, the UK. The unit's employees have become de facto campaign workers. That's what we need to understand. And you need to understand the incredible political bias of their fact checkers, like PolitiFact, like Snopes. But there's something else about this. The facial recognition aspect that's come out this last week or so, and many reports on it. RT's headline, Big Brother is watching. New Facebook facial recognition spots you even if you're not tagged. And of course, Facebook is selling it as it's going to help people to better manage their identity. Using facial recognition, which is kind of like The Graduate, you know, we'd like to know a little bit about you for our files. We'd like to help you learn to help yourself, to manage your identity better. Look around you. All you see are sympathetic eyes. Yeah, that's exactly what they're saying here. Facebook wants your face, and Gizmodo says you'll probably let them have it. You'll probably let them have it. Big Brother. And I think it's no coincidence whatsoever that they gradually started conditioning people with these reality TV programs, calling the first one Big Brother, because that's exactly what it was. Everybody looking at perfectly ordinary people that had absolutely nothing to offer, nothing interesting about themselves, but they just put themselves on display and then became celebrities. And everybody's like, whoa, yeah, that kind of conditioned, that's a very popular program, conditioned people to want to do the same thing in a small way. Who knows, maybe if I put my entire life out on the internet and I get a lot of followers, I'll be kind of like a Big Brother celebrity. No, you'll be living in an Orwellian society. Facebook just got one step closer to becoming the literal embodiment of its name, says Gizmodo. On Tuesday, the company announced it's rolling out several new facial recognition features on its platform. Once you agree to let Facebook, and of course you're going to accept that mark of the beast because it's just going to work out great for you. Once you agree to let them use your face data, you then gain access to tools the company says will help to protect your privacy. It's going to protect your privacy, not steal it. It's going to alert you when photos of you are uploaded, even if you haven't been tagged in them. And this is the way they sell it. They say, we're going to prevent catfishing and revenge porn. Oh, okay. Okay, so I'll give them all of my data so they can do that. Because we know that they would never misuse that data. Quartz pointed out, Facebook is giving the U.S. government more and more data. Requests rose by 26% from the last 6 months of 2016 to the first 6 months of 2017. Globally, requests for data from Facebook by governments increased by 21%. Since 2013, the U.S. number has been steadily rising, and it has roughly tripled in those 4 years. So three times the amount of information from governments. In the first 6 months of 2013, they granted the government, which includes the police, they point out, 79% of what they had requested. In the first 6 months of 2017, now they're giving them 85%. Say 57% of the requests they got from law enforcement included a non-disclosure order so that they won't tell you that they're turning your information over. So that happens in 57% of the time, nearly two-thirds here. The type of secret requests was up a whopping 50% in the most recent period. So it is jumping by leaps and bounds. The amount of information that the government is requesting, the percentage of those requests is actually going up as well, and then doing it secretly without telling you. And in Germany, they're taking notice, not so much of the privacy as they are even of the fact that this is no longer competitive. A German watchdog group has found that Facebook has abused its dominant market position. So they're looking at this from a monopoly standpoint. And this is what we've have been saying, is that it is a de facto monopoly. And if they're going to tell somebody, and I don't think they should, if they're going to tell a baker or a photographer somewhere that they must serve the client because they have a business, so you can't have any discretion about who you serve for any reason whatsoever, then wouldn't that apply to these gigantic de facto monopolies? Germany is saying how big it is. In Germany, they say 41% of Germans have an active Facebook account, but in the U.S. it's 66%. And the Germans are concerned that it is a monopoly. And we have 50% more people that are on Facebook here in the United States. It is an economic monopoly, and it is a monopoly that is being used to give more and more data to the government. And now they want your biometric data. And as they said on Quartz, or Gizmodo, you're probably going to give it to them because it's so important to put your pictures out there for all your friends and to be a little minor celebrity, isn't it? Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Live from Austin, Texas, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're going to have Joel Skousen join us in this hour. We're going to talk about Jeff Sessions' awakening, because we're going to talk about not just Uranium-1 and Jeff Sessions saying he's now going to open an investigation into that, but he is also opening an investigation into the crimes committed by the BLM, the crimes committed by the FBI, and the crimes committed by the Department of Justice in the Bundy trial. It's so egregious that he has personally requested a third-party investigation of what has happened there. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk a little bit about Bitcoin and about DACA. That is the next fight coming up. They wanted to get this done before the end of the year, the Democrats did. They said that was their number one priority. Well, they're going to be revisiting DACA. They had a major reversal this week as the Supreme Court shut down a California judge saying that part of a lawsuit out of California saying that they wanted the Trump administration to release internal documents and communications about their motivations with DACA and with borders. And the Supreme Court said that is totally out of your scope. That doesn't have anything to do with the law. They basically shut that down. So it was a big victory. There were no dissents in that decision from the Supreme Court shutting down the California court. They said, Attorney General Sessions said the discovery order, they were saying, we want a discovery order. We want to know what your motivations are. Remember, this is what the circuit courts, who have been reversed by the Supreme Court as well, circuit court said, well, I know what the law says, but I have a problem with the fact that in other areas, Donald Trump has said that he doesn't like this or that. So I think his motivations in that were wrong. It doesn't matter what his motivations were. It doesn't matter what they had to say about the law. What matters is the law itself. They want to judge his motivations and imply sinister motivations to him and shut down the law on the basis of that. Attorney General Sessions said the discovery order in the DACA cases was dramatically intrusive and premature. And I'm pleased with tonight's decision that the district court's order was overly broad. Yeah, that's what we continually see coming out of California. Insanity. We've now got a new lawsuit coming out of California, out of Santa Cruz. The city and the county of Santa Cruz announced Wednesday that they're going to file lawsuits in state court against 29 oil, gas, and coal companies seeking damages related to the company's impact on global climate change. They say that oil companies, gas companies, coal companies, people, defendants, they say, who have a historical and current fossil fuel extraction and production records that are publicly available in various areas, they say they have caused crises like wildfires, droughts, and strong storms. So now you've got judges in California, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and others, trying to block Trump's perfectly legal orders to say, we are going to vet people coming in from countries that we deem to be dangerous, countries that Obama went to war with without a complaint from these people. And they said, no, you can't do that because you don't like Muslims. That's why you're doing it. We want to see, we want discovery to examine your motivations and to shut this down. And the Supreme Court says, you can't do that. That has nothing to do with anything. He has legal ability to control who comes into this country. And if he thinks that it is a security issue, they can vet people or they can stop it until they have a way to vet people. And we just had the case in Germany of a guy who was 33 years old. And claiming that he was a teenager, and then he committed multiple crimes and murder and so forth. And they had no way of knowing exactly how old he was because it was all hidden. They had no way to verify his identity. They don't even know your name. They certainly don't know your age. They don't know your political background, if you're a terrorist. They don't know anything about people. So we have to control the borders, and we have to do that. But the people in California are now going to go after the oil and gas companies. It's time for them to pay for the damage to their cars because the oil companies caused the forest fires there. You always have forest fires. Are they going to blame them for earthquakes? Are they going to blame them for tornadoes? Yes, they will. Blame them for hurricanes in Florida. I mean, we've always had hurricanes in Florida. They've always had wildfires in California. This isn't even the biggest one that they've had, even though it's continuing to grow. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. I was just talking about the fact that we have a city and a county in California, Santa Cruz, have announced that they are filing 29 different lawsuits against oil, gas, and coal companies seeking damages relating to wildfires, droughts, and strong storms, saying that it is a function of climate change. This is the insanity that we're seeing in the legal system. And one of the things, remember as we talk about this, and they're saying they did fossil fuel extraction. That's the basis for the damage. They did fossil fuel extraction, so therefore they created the wildfires here. That's the chain of thought of these people. Understand that when we look at what happened with the tax bill, there was the big, the obvious part about the taxes, but there was also the Obamacare mandate that was repealed, the penalty repeal for that, the massive tax of that. And then there was also Anwar. Remember President Trump up there saying, yeah, we got Anwar done. They've been trying to get Anwar done for 30, 40 years. And they have. And we're not talking, again, about Debbie Wasserman Schultz's IT guy. No, Anwar is the Alaskan National Wildlife Refuge. And they made that off limits to oil exploration during Jimmy Carter. And people have been trying in Alaska to get that available for a very long time. Alaskan Senator Lisa Murkowski and others. As Paul Ryan said, some people have been working here since I was on the second grade. They've been working on this project with Anwar. And he pointed to Representative Don Young, the longest serving member of Congress, who has made Anwar drilling a priority since he arrived in 1973. And Young cheered back. Yes, we finally got it done. Why do the people in Alaska want this done if it's going to destroy their beautiful country? It isn't. It isn't going to destroy Alaska. Not at all. I said, after decades and decades in this chamber, we're opening up a small, non-wilderness area of the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge for responsible development. That is the most ambitious step we have taken in years to secure our own energy future. But when we look at it on the other side of this, you've got Newsweek. And I have shown on air many times, I should have brought it in today, but I've shown on air many times Newsweek magazine. Back at the same time they took the Alaskan National Wildlife Refuge off limits. And again, he's saying this is not, it's going to allow drilling in a tiny area of this that is not a wildlife refuge. But it let us get to the oil. They didn't want you to get to the oil. And they wanted you to imagine that we had peak oil, that there was only so much oil in the ground, and we're basically going to be out of, and this was the, what they put in Newsweek, they said we were going to be out of oil in 8 years. Now, this is 1979. We're going to be out of oil in 8 years, and natural gas had a little bit longer than that. Coal, they said, you got 666 years of coal. But they were saying 8 or 9 years, and we're going to be out of oil and gas. And now we are awash because of technology. But they wanted to make sure that you were going to be out of oil. They wanted you to be out of oil. They wanted to have an oil embargo. They wanted OPEC to be in control. They wanted to work with these guys who are working with us on the petrodollar to squeeze the consumers. And as we said many times, it is not just a matter of lifestyle. It is also a matter of life expectancy. You're not only not going to prosper, you're going to have a shorter life expectancy if you have expensive energy. And you can see down in Alaska, Australia, where they went crazy for renewable energy, solar and so forth. They, this one province where Elon Musk went to give them a battery that was only going to do about 2% of the homes there. They don't have because they've moved over to renewable energy and blown up their coal plants and their fossil fuel plants. They've had massive blackouts, like there's some kind of a third world infrastructure. And when we look at people in Germany and in the UK, where they have artificially increased the expense of energy, you've got retirees who cannot afford to heat their home. And we see what happens when people who are retirees can't heat their home or they can't cool their home, as we saw in the aftermath of the hurricane in Florida, they die. And so you've got some of these people who their energy costs are higher than their mortgage costs, kind of like Obamacare. They love to put those things on us and then pretend that there is no inflation. And so this is truly about our survival. But Newsweek, the same people who told us that we're going to be out of oil and gas in 8 years back in 1979, and were telling us that we had to lock up the massive reserves of oil that we had in Alaska, claiming that all of it was a wildlife refuge. It's the same thing that Obama did with his Antiquities Act. Something that was designed to preserve Indian culture antiquities. And instead what they did was they took millions upon millions of acres, misusing that law. And so what they're saying in the Newsweek article, tax bill approved Arctic drilling will plunder. Where have we heard that before? Oh, we heard that about your money that was being taken by the Democrats and you heard Bernie Sanders saying, they're plundering the Treasury because they think that your money belongs to them. And so they're saying, this is going to plunder 10 billion barrels of oil. It'll destroy a million acres of wilderness. No, it won't. It's a small area of that. But then they have this one quote. You can have oil, or you can have this pristine place. You can't have both. No compromise, says a guy of the Alaska Wilderness League. They always offer us a false choice and say, here's your choice, this or this. It's like, no, that isn't the choice. We're not limited to those two things. We can get the oil out without destroying that area. They always offer you this false dichotomy. And the interesting thing about this is it just calls for the federal government to hold at least two oil and gas lease sales within the next decade. And as NPR reports, which oil companies, if any, will actually want to drill there? We don't know. It's going to be an auction. So we'll have to see what happens with that. Meanwhile, in Europe, we've had another vote in Catalonia. They keep putting them to say, okay, first they went down and tried to shut down the election from Spain. Got very brutal with everyone with that. And then the election went ahead, and they had an overwhelming majority of the people say, no, we want independence. So they said, no, you're not going to get it. They arrested the leaders that were down there, and they said, we're going to hold another election. Well, they did. And guess what? The people voted for independence again. What are they going to do now? I don't know. But when we look at the UK, we see that people there, the globalists, it's unraveling. The European Union is unraveling from the bottom, and it's unraveling from the top. That's what's happening with the UK and the independence movement there. Let's get the Nigel Farage clip talking about how the people in the UK are working very hard to try to undo Brexit still. Here's Nigel Farage.
I don't think I've ever heard so little criticism of the United Kingdom in this chamber in all my life. And I guess that doesn't really take much working out, does it? Monsieur Barnier said earlier that there were key areas upon which he wasn't prepared to make many concessions. Well, you didn't need to, sir, because you were up against Theresa May. And she was... And she was all for making as many concessions as she possibly could, including agreeing a ludicrous bill of up to 40 billion sterling for us to have the right to leave, a continued role for the European Court of Justice, and in line with that, family reunions that mean, frankly, open-door immigration from the European Union is going to continue for years to come, and almost bizarrely, a commitment for ongoing regulatory alignment. It's as if, even though we're leaving, effectively the British government wants to keep us in some form of single market relationship. So I'm not surprised you're all very pleased with her. Theresa the appeaser has given in on virtually everything. But as an observation, in an exercise of power, it's fascinating. Whether we like or dislike
the European Union... All right, we don't have time for the full clip. But has he called her Theresa the appeaser? He's also called her Theresa Maybe. And it's looking like they're doing everything they can, every tactic that they can to shut down this election the same way the Spanish government is trying to shut down Catalonia. But you know what? You can't stem that tide. Now, of course, in the UK, the latest issue are people in Scotland appealing to the European Union court saying, you stop this. Because it has to be bilateral. No, it doesn't. It's called a Declaration of Independence. We'll be right back with Joel Skousen. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and joining us now is Joel Skousen. No stranger to those of you who watch InfoWars. Joel's website is joelskousen.com. He also has worldaffairsbrief.com. I wanted to get Joel on to talk about a couple of things. One of them, the Bundy trial, because Mr. Skousen, we've now had Attorney General Sessions yesterday. There was a hashtag on Twitter, Sessions Awakes. He's ordered an investigation of Uranium One, but also an investigation of the misconduct by the government prosecutors in the Bundy trial, and also misconduct by the BLM and the FBI there as well. Thank you for joining us.
Well, my pleasure. It's good to be with you, David, as usual.
Thank you. What do you make of this, the fact that Jeff Sessions has now ordered a third-party investigation of what happened in this Bundy trial? I mean, this is pretty egregious stuff that's come to light in the last week, isn't it?
Well, the big story is, of course, that the lead investigator of the Bureau of Land Management has been dismissed as a whistleblower, has indicated and documented then the entire cover-up that went on during the investigative process at the BLM and with the prosecutor, lead prosecutor, Stephen Meyer of Nevada. Mm-hmm. He implicates Stephen Meyer as having covered up for BLM misconduct and withholding of evidence, some severe charges that he has documented in an 18-page memo. Meyer covered this up. His higher-ups at the BLM covered up this whistleblower memo, and he finally had to leak it to the defense of the Bundy case, as well as to Representative Matt Shea in Washington State, who's a real great patriot. And so we now have this 18-page memo, and it is devastating.
Yes, a kill book, all these other things that he's got there, people's pictures with X's across their face that were with the Bundys, but bragging about how he had previously, under duress, caused people that he was coming after with unjust prosecutions to commit suicide, had a list that he was proud of the people that he had driven to suicide. Amazing.
Yeah. You're referring to Special Agent in Charge Dan Love, who is one of the most corrupt deep state agents. You know, it's really a mistake to give the BLM and the IRS and the Department of Education SWAT team law enforcement powers because it goes to their head. This Special Agent in Charge Dan Love had a kill list where, as you mentioned, he listed and bragged about people that he had driven to suicide because of harassing, like the Hagee family in Nevada. In 2012, head judge of Nevada just excoriated the BLM for a conspiracy with other federal agents to destroy this ranching family. And yet I want to say that in all of these cases where judges protest and excoriate federal agencies, they don't sanction them. They have the power to put them in jail. They have the power to direct the prosecutor to bring up charges against these people for violations of civil rights, and they do not do it. In other words, even the protestations are a cover for the fact that these judges are part of the deep state and covering up for wrongdoing.
And we saw that with this judge in the Bundy trials, previous trials. Gloria Navarro, who's the same judge here for the Bundy trial, and previous trials, and they had a couple of them, of other people who had shown up to assist the Bundys to help protect them from the aggressions of the BLM and the FBI and the snipers and so forth. She had done a lot of very egregious things on behalf of the government, concealing what Dan Love and others had done. It was only because Larry Wooten leaked these documents, and this thing was going to go blow wide open, and she was determined that she wasn't going to go down with these people as well, that she was finally forced to dismiss this case.
Well, actually, she did not dismiss the case. She declared a mistrial.
That's right, mistrial. Yes, exactly.
And it's a very important difference. The defense had demanded a dismissal of the charges because of the extensive wrongdoing. But in declaring a mistrial, this allows the prosecution to undo partially their mistakes of withholding evidence from the defense and then proceed to prosecute him all over again. And I'm sure that Navarro will instruct the jury to disregard all the wrongdoing of the previous prosecution and the BLM and only stick to the facts, and that if they find them to be true, they must convict. Those are the kinds of instructions that judges give.
And that's why it's very important what Attorney General Sessions has done, because, as we've said, you know, she's been on the government side in an unashamed way in these previous trials. And it is likely that after declaring the mistrial, she'll come back in and try to keep this ball rolling. That's why the fact that Attorney General Sessions personally said, "I want a third party to take a look at that." That's why that's important.
Well, you know, if you read the memo, and I want to say that this is the lead story in today's World Affairs Brief. I won't have time in this interview to go through all the details of the Wooten memo, but they are devastating.
Yes.
And if they want a free copy of today's World Affairs Brief, your listeners can email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. And I will give them a free copy of this. They need it in their records. This is one of the things that proves how corruption left over in these law enforcement agencies has pervaded, despite the Trump administration trying to drain the swamp. they're still out there. They realize this is big for Trump to drain, even if he tried. And I'm glad that Sessions is going to do this because, frankly, there's a lot of these BLM agents and FBI agents that should go to jail. And in fact, Prosecutor Stephen Meyer, who's going to prosecute the new case in February, should go to jail because he got this memo, he covered it up, and Wooten said that he received information from his supervisor that Wooten furiously demanded his dismissal. Mm-hmm. That's obstruction of justice. That can send Meyer to prison. He can be under the federal docket. Now, I'm hoping that Jeff Sessions really takes a strong stand on this, because this is very important. Clear back in 2012, when the chief judge of Nevada excoriated the BLM for their conspiracy against the Hagee family in Nevada, nothing was done to those people. Something desperately needs to be done to send a message, and that has to be putting prosecutors and BLM people in jail and prison. And of course, we would hope for the ultimate outcome that the Trump administration and Secretary of State Zinke would in fact start the process of returning federal lands to Western states where they took most of the state land and kept it in the control of the federal government. That's what's motivated all of these protests.
That's right. And that's a core issue here. And we lose track of that when we look at the injustice in the system. But people who don't even agree with that issue or who don't understand that issue, even if they understand it and disagree with it, they need to be concerned about this corruption and this blocking of justice. I said earlier in the week, I said she wants to reserve a future date to look at this trial again and revisit it. I said she ought to reserve that as the beginning of the trial for Myrie, the prosecutor. As Wooten said to him, he said, did you know, and listed a whole bunch of things that were being done improperly. And he said, well, I do now. And it was a couple of days later that Myrie then dismissed him. So that is the corruption, the criminal obstruction of justice. And it's a good thing that Attorney General Jeff Sessions is now going to take a look at it. As I said before, I hope it's not going to be somebody who is an Obama holdover. I don't think it will be if he's concerned enough about it to personally order this. We're going to be right back with Joel Skousen, and we're going to talk about what's going on in North Korea, what may happen next there. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. David Knight, and we're talking to Joel Skousen. And as he pointed out in the last segment, if you want to get the amazing report from the BLM whistleblower, Larry Wooten, you can get that as a free report. He'll send that out to you. It was Joel, it was editor at worldaffairsbrief.com. Is that correct?
That's correct. Thank you, David.
Okay, good. All right, I want to talk to you now about North Korea, because there's been rumors of a bloody nose attack on North Korea. We hear rumors of troops training to take out nuclear sites on the ground in North Korea. You follow this very closely. What's your opinion about what's going to be happening there in the near future?
It's very clear from Trump's speech today on the new national security threats that he is very, very serious about taking care. He said, I'm going to take care of North Korea, meaning I'm going to handle this problem. He excoriated the former administrations for buying into the phony diplomacy and the lies of North Korea, pretending to overcome their nuclear or take down the nuclear program and faking it and withdrawing later on. But he still, there are some very disturbing indications from the Trump administration this week that his globalist advisors surrounding him are trying to talk him out of it or explain or give him other options that are not going to be effective.
Rex Tillerson.
This week at the Daily Telegraph, they quoted an unnamed source within the Trump administration that said that they are most likely planning a bloody nose attack, a cruise missile attack on an air base in North Korea to send a message to Kim that we won't tolerate this kind of behavior. This is, you know, I'm a former fighter pilot, military officer in the Marine Corps, and I can tell you this is stupidity. It's worse than stupidity.
That's like going out and whacking a hornet's nest to tell them that you're not going to take them hanging around your house anymore.
That's exactly right. Kim Jong-un is going to launch an attack on Seoul, South Korea, with his massive artillery forces on the DMZ at the least excuse that he has been attacked by the United States. So this is worse than foolishness. Mm-hmm. Trump has been considering a naval blockade to enforce the sanctions around North Korea, and he certainly has the naval assets to do that with three aircraft carrier task forces. But this week, he presented to the United Nations Security Council the idea that they ought to sanction 10 ships that they found breaking the blockade and blacklist those ships so that they cannot deal with other ports. And once again, this is it seems like his advisors are telling him this is a better thing than a blockade, which North Korea will view as an act of war. And I'm just getting these signals all around that the military advisors around Trump are trying to do less rather than more in terms of taking down North Korea. Now, I can assure you that despite the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations, saying that diplomacy is the only solution in North Korea, it is a non-starter. Kim Jong-un has started with the proposition that my nuclear program and my missile program is non-negotiable. So what's there to negotiate?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sanctions.
Yeah, he sees that as his ticket to influence in the world.
Well, and Trump in his speech continued to downplay, I think, the Chinese threat. There's a new code word being put out called revisionist powers, which refers to China and Russia as revisionist powers, whatever that means. I mean, I'm a political scientist. I've never heard that word before.
It indicates
that they've conjured up a new concept like containment of the Soviet Union, which was nothing more than permissiveness. To describe Russia and China, who are, I think, legitimate threats in the long term. Even though Russia is doing the right thing in Syria by blocking the globalist objective, they still intend to strike the West someday with their growing forces of nuclear weapons. And they are certainly not revisionist powers. But it indicates that somebody else, his globalist advisors, wrote this speech for him. This is clearly not Trump's style of what he was saying. And I'm just worried that there's a little too much control. Trump, I believe, has great instincts. He does sense what's right, but he doesn't have the experience or the deep understanding of the workings of the deep state to counter what they're telling him, to counter the military advice, to know what it really takes to stop North Korea from being a threat to the world. And I've outlined that in the World Affairs Brief, that you've got to decapitate the three legs of their offensive power: their artillery forces on the DMZ, the missile launch sites, which are numerous, and the air bases. The only one that's really tough, of course, is the artillery forces. I mean, the entire DMZ is loaded with 15,000 artillery tubes. So you would have to do some real area bombing, take a lot of resources to decapitate those artillery forces, but it can be done, and it must be done, because those can instantaneously respond to any other attack that the U.S. may do, and it has to take priority in terms of defanging Kim Jong-un and the North Korean forces.
You know, they've had the demilitarized zone there since the end of the Korean War in the 50s, and it's heavily armed, and talking about all the artillery positions that are there. That's why when I look at these couple of defections recently of North Koreans who escaped, of course, one of them was shot many times, still survived. But, you know, I look at that. What's your take on this in terms of the status of that demilitarized zone and all the troops there? How do these guys get through in a situation like that? Are they really ready? Are they really prepared if they can have a couple of defectors get through those through that area?
Well, it's a long enough border area that it's virtually impossible to station soldiers in every portion of it. And so they did try to escape. Being soldiers on the front line, they know where the weak spots are. And, you know, they did get discovered, but not before the latest one was far enough away that he could evade being shot, even though they fired at him. So this was in a lesser defended portion of the DMZ. But you've got to remember that North Korea really doesn't believe so far that the U.S. is really serious until Trump came along. I mean, they've even shot an American major decades ago at the DMZ, and the U.S. did nothing to sanction North Korea. North Korea has shelled with artillery an island resort belonging to South Korea, and the U.S. and South Korea did nothing.
And do you think that they're going to try to do something as part of the Olympics? Do you think that North Korea would be foolish enough to initiate something as part of that?
Well, it is a political football now about the Olympics. You know, the Olympic venues are in the South Korean mountains to the north, very near, within 50 miles of the DMZ. So they're very vulnerable to what North Korea can do. That would probably be viewed as bad form by North Korea to try to intervene in the Olympics. And it's clear that Donald Trump probably wants to avoid any military action during the Olympics. Although I will say that if he starts something beforehand as a bloody nose attack, we're going to have a war with North Korea and South Korea during the Olympics, and that's going to cancel the Olympics. That's why venues like Salt Lake City are being considered as alternative sites, because it's very clear to the administration that it may well interfere with the Olympics.
That would be an incredibly foolish thing to do, some kind of a bloody nose attack, period, but especially before the Olympics. If the North Koreans were to initiate something during the Olympics, that would bring the wrath of the international community down on them, and that would give the Americans carte blanche to do whatever they wanted to North Korea at that point. So I don't really see an attack taking place in the Olympic Games. Do you agree?
No, I do agree, David. In fact, I believe that Trump is planning on something after the Olympics that'll put it in a better time frame all the way around. Although it's very costly to keep those three aircraft carrier task forces on station there doing exercises, but I think that's my best guess what will happen.
So that is the time frame in which we're likely to see something is going to be after the Olympics.
I think it is. What my greatest fear is that if we have a bloody nose attack and Kim does attack South Korea and we get into a full-blown South Korean war, China, I don't believe, and Russia are ready to back up North Korea and start World War III with the U.S. over this issue, even though North Korea has been designed as the trigger event for World War III for many years. But
I wish we had more time, but we got to cut it there. Thank you so much for joining us, Joel, and I'm sorry to have to cut that short. Joel Skousen, you can find him at joelskousen.com. Also, worldaffairsbrief.com. Get that information about Larry Wooten from Joel. We'll be right back.
It's that time of year when the world falls in love. Every song you hear seems to say, Merry Christmas, may your new year dreams come true.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and yes, it is going to be a Merry Christmas. This is the last show before Christmas. We're going to be having a rebroadcast on Monday and Tuesday. We'll be home with our families. I hope you enjoy the program that we have put together for you on Monday and Tuesday. And of course, as I said yesterday, it's a Merry Congress and a Happy New Trump year. And that's what we're going to have in just a moment. We have the signing of the tax bill by President Trump and comments that he had to make. We're going to play for that for you in just a moment. But I want to remind you of some things that you might find healthy coming up into the new year. You know, the new year is a time that you turn over a new leaf and you say, I'm going to get healthier this year. I'm going to take better care of myself, take better care of my family. This is a great time to stock up on products that are going to help you do that, things that are going to help you to improve your health. You can get massive discounts off of some of our most popular products and free shipping, and it'll be a great way for you to start the new year right now. We've got things like Super Male Vitality, 50% off with free shipping. Silver Bullet, 67% off with free shipping. That's our colloidal silver. Also, Brain Force Plus, Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine. We have Secret 12, our vitamin B12, all those 50% off plus free shipping. Some of the newest products, the Real Red Pill, 50% off plus free shipping. Cell Force and Alpha Power, both of those new products, 50% off with free shipping. Myco ZX is now back in stock, 25% off with free shipping. And water filters. If you're not filtering your water, you really need to do that as a first priority. We've got ProPure products that are 25% off along with free shipping, pro shipping. Yeah, we got ProPure products with free shipping. And you have to have clean water. That's an absolute essential. So take a look at the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. It's a great time to stock up for the new year. Start preparing right away to get healthier, and it's going to be a good new year, I think. So let's go to the signing of the tax bill. It looked like it was going to be, heard some reports that they might have to wait until January the 3rd because there's all these regulations and red tape that they had to get through. But, you know, President Trump is really good about cutting regulations and red tape. So they cut that as well, and he signed it today. Here's his remarks. You see him signing it right there.
We won't do the whole thing, but this is basically what it is. That's your bill. And I want to thank some people in particular that aren't here because, again, we expected a formal ceremony in 2 weeks. But Mitch McConnell has been fantastic. Worked so hard. We would speak at 3 a.m. and 2 a.m. and we would speak whenever we had to speak. But he worked so hard. And the exact same thing can be said for Paul Ryan. They are very proud of this. And we're already seeing the results. And as I said, long ahead of schedule, Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, thank you very much. Orrin Hatch, the chairman, made a beautiful speech the other day in front of the White House. An absolutely brilliant, beautiful speech, and we appreciated it, and I appreciated it. Hard working. Kevin Brady, I don't think he slept for months. It's almost like that's all he did was this. Mike Enzi, Senator Enzi. Diane Black, Rob Portman, the group of Rob Portman. Rob worked so hard, so knowledgeable on the subject. Pat Toomey, likewise. Tim Scott, likewise. John Thune, likewise. These people work so hard, and I don't know if they're given the proper credit. And the whole Senate, when I say the Senate, unfortunately, the Republicans in the Senate. Democrats don't like tax cuts. They want to raise your taxes.
Sure do.
They don't want to lower your taxes. They want to raise your taxes, and they want to spend money foolishly on things that we don't need in many cases. So we're cutting taxes, we're taking care of our military, and we're taking care of people. And we're really doing a job on jobs. So these folks have been so fantastic that I had to call them in. And plenty of others, believe me, Republicans in the House and Republicans in the Senate have been incredible. So this is what we got. We had it. It was all set to go. As soon as I got back from Christmas, where we'll be working in Florida, I'll be working very hard during that Christmas because we have many things we're talking about, including North Korea, including a lot of things happening in the Middle East, as you know. We've made tremendous strides, obviously, in Syria with ISIS. We've taken back virtually all of the caliphate, all of the land, same thing in Iraq, and we're making tremendous strides. It's sort of the unwritten story right now, but since my speech on Afghanistan, we're making tremendous progress, tremendous strides. We've opened it up, and it's a whole different world in Afghanistan, I can tell you that. So I'll be working very hard over the holidays. Again, I want to wish you a very Merry Christmas. I have some beautiful pens over here. And because all of
all right, so that was the signing ceremony from President Trump. And, of course, he just signed the bill so that your tax bill is going to be smaller next year. You know, the Democrats think this is a big loss. They think that it's theft. They think it's plunder. It's looting the treasury and so forth and so on. But just understand, as I said yesterday, the amount of tax cut the typical middle-class family is going to get is around $2,000, $2,500. That's about what a car payment would be. That's what they're giving you back. And they're taking away this Obama tax, the mandate on Obamacare, that for many people had become bigger than their home mortgage. So take away a home mortgage that's on you and say, and hey, here's enough money to pay for a car payment if you want. Okay, I think that's a win. I don't think that's something that we're going to rue the day that happened. I think that's a good thing for everybody. The only way that that's a bad thing is if you buy into the divisional class warfare, the envy of the Democrats. That's the only way that they can spin this as a bad thing. The people who want control over everything in your life, they want control over your budget, over your family's budget. They think that all of your labor, all of your money belongs to them. Send it to them and they will dole it back to you like children on an allowance if you do everything that they say. That's not what we want. The next fight coming up is DACA, the Dreamers. Nancy Pelosi said that was their number one priority. They wanted to get that done by the end of the year. Jeff Flake said, hey, I've got an assurance from Mitch McConnell that we're going to do all this stuff. Well, Mitch McConnell kind of slammed him this last week. One of the big losers in this bill this last week was Jeff Flake, along with the Democrats. And it looks like Mitch McConnell maybe, in the most hopeful interpretation of events, he likes winning better than losing. And he likes winning maybe enough that he will put aside his dislike of President Trump to win. We'll see what happens, because they're moving in that direction for DACA. And let me tell you why this is important. You know, there's a story just yesterday. A teen YouTube star in Mexico gunned down after insulting a cartel boss. What this guy would do, he was only 17 years old, but he'd go hang out in bars and put up live YouTube video of himself getting drunk or taking drugs, marijuana, or, you know, with women and shiny sports cars or whatever. Kid, 17 years old, and he becomes a YouTube star in Mexico by getting drunk live. Well, one of these times when he was drunk, he started throwing some pretty vulgar insults at one of the drug cartel guys there. As a matter of fact, the guy's name was like Nemesio, like Nemesis, okay? Cervantes was his last name, and he's got a nickname for the drug cartel. But these guys are not like Al Capone and these others, right? The Al Capone, the other guys, I mean, they would machine gun down their competition during alcohol prohibition. But during this war on drugs that we've created, quite frankly, we've created these monsters, and they are incredibly violent. For example, he didn't go over there and threaten this kid. Then go over and punch him in the nose or break his arm or break his leg. No, he sent a couple of hit guys over after he did this video and shot him 18 times. That's what we don't want coming to America. That'd be great if we would stop the thing that has created these people, that funds these people, the war on drugs. But at the very least, we have to have borders up so that these types of drug cartels do not come into our country with their beheadings and their shootings and everything. And we can see this already happening on Long Island, for example. MS-13 that is happening there. Coming after illegal dreamers who are there. They're the victims of the MS-13 gangs on Long Island. Hispanic kids who are not violent, who came here illegally, but they came here to escape the violence. And because we have open borders, these people follow them in. Chain migration. That is what will chain you. That is what will put chains on you. We cannot support an unlimited number of people in this country. If they have the dream to come here and be educated at our expense because their government doesn't want to educate them, if these foreign citizens can come here and be educated at your expense, your taxes are going to go up. Your state and local taxes, all those things, yeah, they're going to go up to pay for the schools to the extent that you won't be able to afford your American dream of owning a home. That is the battle that awaits us in the new year. What is going to happen with DACA? We'll see what happens with it. But Merry Christmas to you. Hope you enjoy the holiday with your family. That concludes our broadcast today. Alex Jones is coming up.